Welcome to another episode of the Deeper Than Oak podcast. Super excited to have Trevor Hall. I was explaining to my wife that I was having you on the show today, and she's like, oh, the name didn't sound familiar. I was like, we've listened to a lot of his songs before. So anyways, so she's
right on.
As excited as me to have you. So welcome to the show, Trevor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Trevor, can we start with just a few minutes of your background?
Yeah, I'm singer-songwriter, musician. I've been doing it for, I started really young and around 16 years old. So I've been doing it for, I think, 20 years now, I guess. Yeah, it's just all I know. And that's my passion. It's my love. And I've just, yeah, blessed to you know, still be able to do it. Yeah, just hope to continue the journey and the learning process through music. But yeah, try to use my music as a tool of like healing, not only just expressing my creativity, but, kind of expressing it in a way that helps heal whatever I'm going through or,
What got you started down that path and that music?
I don't know. I think I've always just kind of, been interested in like self-discovery, you know, and like into like something more than just like, you know, what we're seeing around us type thing. Just always interested in like spirituality and that and the spiritual path. And how like different cultures and people around the world like, you know, express that relationship.
How does that tie into your upbringing? Were you like raised religious or anything?
No, I wasn't raised in a religious house. I mean, we went to church on Sundays, you know, sometimes, but it wasn't like a, you know, very strict type of thing. It was just kind of my dad is a religious man and like plays the drums in church and stuff, but not in a very parochial, I think, sense, you know. And my mom is very spiritual, you know, like in her own, you know, unique way, you know. But I didn't have any type of like, yeah, I think like a upbringing in a spiritual, in a religious house, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It was more of just my own interest, I think. And I grew up like on a very small island in South Carolina, and there wasn't a lot of, access to knowledge of like, you know, how other people thought of things, you know, like I was really into like karate. I remember because I think part of the reason I was so into karate was because it showed these other cultures, like these Asian cultures and these, you know, from around the world that I was like, whoa, this is, I don't know. I was just like so interested, in how other people did things, I guess, because maybe it was because I felt a little stuck, you know. So yeah, I don't know, it was always that, and then music kind of became this tool to like explore the, you know, kind of like the depths of my heart and being and mind and all that stuff. So it's just how it happened that way.
That's awesome. For me, it took getting into psychedelics to expand. I did grow up in Utah. It's called Happy Valley. Everybody's Mormon. It's very religious, and everybody serves 2-year Mormon missions and all of that. And that was just like, I knew all the answers. You know, I know everything because this is what my church is telling me. Right. And then getting into psychedelics, I'm like, holy crap, I don't even know who I am, let alone the answers to life.
Right.
So you kind of had, I guess, a little bit of the opposite approach. And you talked about 16 is when you started songwriting. At 16, where you're like, this is what I want to do. Was it as a hobby or like, this is what I want to do for my career?
Well, I started kind of around like, yeah, 15 or 16 writing songs and stuff. And it wasn't really like this is what I want to do. It was never really like that. It was just a deep love, you know, for music. And I just kind of like, I think that's why it was so beautiful, is because I didn't think about anything else. You know, oh, if this is what I want to do for my life or this and that. It was just that, the presence of that, like, creative energy kind of freed me from all my rational, you know, thinking. And it just, I was really into, like, surfing as well. And I, in my mind, I wanted to be, like, a surfer. And, you know, music was just who I was. Like, but I was really, like, focused on that. And then, yeah, and then it just kind of took over, you know, and became everything.
When did that happen? Like, when did you decide this is my career, this is how I'm going to make a living?
Well, I didn't really decide. I think that's the thing I'm trying to say. Yeah. I went to an art school, a boarding school for high school. And that was like a big step, you know, because I left my small town of South Carolina and was in California, you know, at this boarding school, and was, yeah, just like really learning music, you know, and music theory and how to read music and classical guitar. And, you know, it was just this very incredible period of my life where I just exploration of music, and got a lot of training. And then after that, I had signed my first deal, like right out of my senior year of high school. And that's when I think it was like, okay, I'm going for this, you know, like this is what I want to do. And if I can do it to support myself and others, then, you know, that would be a blessing, you know, and I just stuck with it, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you always kind of had the theme of, you know, introspection, self-healing all the way from the get-go, or did that develop sometime later?
Yeah, I think it was always there from the get-go, you know, and it's like, no matter what, if I try to write, you know, about like something else, you know, it always turns into a song about introspection and stuff. It's like, damn, why can't, you know, you just chill the fuck out and just write a song about, you know, grocery shopping, you know, and, you know, but it's just, that's who I am. It's just that serious side of me that, that, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's just funny.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's not a very common way of life or career path. Talk to me kind of about support or the lack thereof. Was there support from friends and family, or was it kind of like, hey, this is such a hard industry, try to go be a doctor, you know, or XYZ?
It was really difficult. It was very, very difficult because I had signed this big, you know, deal, this big record deal at like right at 18, you know, years old. And right out of high school, moved to LA and rented this like big, huge apartment, like right on the beach, you know.
You had money coming in now.
Yeah, because I got all this money from the label and, you know, was, but I was alone in this big city, you know, and I had no friends and was really miserable, you know, because I had graduated high school, and high school was, that school was this just beautiful community of artists from all over the world. And to be in that environment all the time was like so, oh, just incredible, incredible. And I signed the deal and you know, it's like, yeah, this is amazing. Like, you're signing this deal. This is incredible. Like, you've made it. Like, all the stuff. I'm like, okay, you know, yeah, I guess, you know, I feel weird, but yeah, okay, you know. And, I moved to LA and was so depressed, was so lonely because I had no community. I was so young, so I couldn't really, like, how was I going to meet people if I wasn't in school or, like, you know, no, yeah. You know, I can't get into bars or anything, you know, and, like, who are you going to meet in a bar? I don't know, you know, so it's, like, it was just a very lonely time. It was a very lonely time, and I ended up, long story short, I ended up getting dropped from that label, you know, like, 3 years later. Ran out of money, recorded like 2 albums for them, which they shelved. They never put them out, and was left in a really, really tough spot, you know. And I remember my dad was, my parents were also, and that was around like 2008, you know, and my dad being in like real estate and stuff really like got nailed. It was a really tough time for my family as well. So it was a very interesting time to like be in that together, you know, because like I was only like 19 or whatever. I was 2008. Yeah, I was like, I guess I was like 21. Yeah. And to be like just trying to make it alone in LA and no money, and then hearing my parents like, you know, getting nailed. It was just a really tough time. And support came, you know, not so much through like financial means, you know, it came from just like a lot of love from like, you know, family and you know, friends, really, you know, that have always been there, you know, or were always there, just like always ask me how things are going, and even if they're shit, you know, and just no matter what, you know, even my parents, no matter what they were going through, you know, like really bad, horrible debt and all this stuff, they just you know, gave it their all, you know. So
and they were supportive of your decision to write music the entire time.
My dad's a musician, and he was like, he's like a rock star, you know. And he's like, he was stoked that I was into the craft, you know, because he's a drummer. Yeah. And he's always been about it.
So whether it was when you're starting 18, 19, you got your first, you know, deal signed, to right now, and you kind of touched on it already a little bit, like everybody else is like, hey, you've made it, this and that. And I hear that quite often to anybody with whatever they deem a success, like, oh, it must be nice to have XYZ or money or the cars or the following or whatever. And then my reaction is typically like, it's just a different set of problems. Like, no, whether you have, you know, your songwriting, or you're working at McDonald's, or where I'm at trying to figure out what the hell I'm trying to do with business. Like, we have 200-ish employees. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I can tell you that maybe on the outside you think it's great, but in the inside, like, it's stressful as hell. It's just different. And once, like, kind of I realized it, that's when I try to make my focus more on the journey rather than the destination. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Like the thoughts on the journey?
Yeah, the journey versus the destination, especially when it comes to, like, other people, like, oh, Trevor, dude, you're awesome. Your life must be perfect. And you're kind of like,
yeah,
maybe it's not so perfect. And also, should other people want to be you or, you know, anyone else, rather than just being comfortable with what they're doing.
The answer to that is no. For the record, the answer to that is no. I get what you're saying, I guess. I think, you know, life is obvious. It's about experience, you know, and you can read things in a book, you know, and you can read teachings or, you know, whatever it may be. they can have an effect on you, but when you experience something like in real life, it's like it's different, you know, it hits different. And I think like you at different points in our lives, we have, you know, certain desires, you know, and those desires can like change. And it's interesting to like look back on those, you know, transient, you know, things and see like how much we were banking on those things to like make us feel happy or fulfilled, you know. And I think like in my own experience, just like as I get older, like becoming like a dad and like, you know, just families expanding and stuff, and seeing your own impermanence is just like, it's really incredible, you know. And so yeah, you think about things in different ways, obviously. But I don't know how that related to your question, but I think all of that, because I've gotten older and have really like seen how everything is really impermanent, it brings me deeper into the present moment, you know. And that's something that I'm always trying to remember, to like bring myself into this moment. I think like that moment, in that moment, you know, I'm not worried about the destination, I'm not worried about, you know, the future or this and that, you know, I'm just present in the here and now. And that's just like a great success, even for like one moment, you know.
And one of the questions that I often ask is, I mean, what is the success of fulfillment? And if I'm hearing you, and you can expound a little bit more, but it's just, am I living in the moment? Am I present? Is that a definition for you, or do you define it in a different way?
I think like being in the moment is part of like success. You know, I don't really know. Success is such a strange word, you know. You know, it's just like makes me feel all sorts of ways, you know. But I think like I guess it's like according to like your own values, you know, and each person has different values and they have the right to have different values and stuff, you know. And I guess like success would be, you know, just like honing those values, I guess, you know. Like for example, somebody may success, you know, their values may be money and capital and growth and that, and when they get it, you know, maybe that's their success, that's what they want, you know. For your success may be different from my success, you know, it is different from my success. That doesn't make either one of ours wrong, I think. I think like, you know, success for me would be able to, yeah, just live a life that I think is, you know, in the present moment, a life of service, and love, you know, and being a good parent, you know, all these things, like, you know, form my own success. So it's kind of like a gray success. Yeah. Success has become not so black and white for me. It's kind of like this in between stage, you know.
I like that. You mentioned kids. Do you have multiple kids, and what are their ages?
I have a 2.5, or two. He turns 3 in March, a boy. And then my wife is pregnant with our second, who she's due in April. Okay. So we're getting close.
Awesome. I have a boy that's about to turn 3 as well in March.
Okay. All right. Well, right on. What's his birthday?
The 15th.
Oh, okay. Kai's is the 13th.
Okay. Wow. 2 days apart.
There you go.
He's my third. For whatever reason, this is coming to my mind. I'm picking up my brother from the airport yesterday, last night, and my 6-year-old and my 5-year-old are with me. My 6-year-old is very emotional and in touch with her emotions, which I love. And she's talking about how she's sad because she didn't want to grow up. And I was like, why are you sad to grow up? And she's like, because I won't be able to dance or X, Y, Z. And anyways, the topic became, I guess, my advice of the best part about growing up is so you can have kids, like the amount of, you know, I guess going back to the success, like that's what I feel like is my daughter happy? Does she feel that I love her? You know?
Right.
Anyways, it was interesting to hear a 6-year-old like be, you know, already starting to worry about future problems.
Yeah. How sweet.
I don't know, YouTube or.
Oh, it's so sweet.
it's kids are anyways, for me, it's super, super fun. Being able to focus on them and their growth. Apart from, I mean, it really puts in perspective, like, who cares what the business is doing? Who cares financially?
Of course,
like,
yeah, yeah.
If you don't have that relationship with the kids, then, and the spouse as well, for me, is super important. Anyways, I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
Going back to, like, the 18, 19-year-old, when you said that you were lonely and you were able to lean on a lot of support from friends and family, I guess, can you dive into a little bit more to that as if you were speaking to yourself at 18 or 19, like this is what to do to, I guess, minimize the stress, the anxiety, the depression, the loneliness. This is what you should do to get out of that.
Well, I didn't have a lot, you know, of that. I think I had to rely on myself, you know, as I think I had to feel it, you know, it was, I had to feel it, you know, for new like life to come in, you know, cause it was like the death of a period of when, you know, it's like a transition, you know, okay, that graduating, you're done. That died now, you know, you're here now. It was at that time that I, had gone to this temple in Southern California, in Laguna Beach. That was about an hour south of LA where I was living, you know, and I just fell into this, just beautiful, incredible community, at this temple. And that became the love and like the nurturing that like I needed, you know, at that time. And it also satisfied a spiritual hunger for me, you know, because it's a traditional like Hindu temple. And I was just very taken with the expression of that spirituality. It was just so mind-blowing to me. So I started driving down from LA like all the time. Like every time I had a free moment, I would drive down to the temple. And eventually I, you know, a few months later, I moved down there to Laguna because they became my community. I didn't know anybody in LA, you know, and I just loved, I needed to feel that. Yeah, that sense of, yeah, togetherness. I moved down there. And so that support, you know, it didn't come so much through like, keep going, or, you know, just keep on fighting, you can do it, or like, you know, how can I, that support just came from giving me space to feel love and service from, like, you know, someone else in the form of, hey, let me cook you dinner, you know, how are you doing, you know, I think you'd like this, you know, or this made me think of you. Like something as simple as that can move one's heart, you know, so deeply. And to have that sense there, in that community, was just really cool, was really special. And that's the support that I got in order to just kind of, yeah, keep my spirit, keep my flame going, you know, because getting dropped and kind of starting back from scratch almost, you know, it was a lot. It took a lot out of me.
When I initially asked the question, I really liked your response of, I think I phrased it in a way like, how are you avoiding the loneliness in these, and you know, these quote unquote negative emotions? And your response was, I just have to feel it. And that is something that I've never wanted to do. I know I need to. I'm trying to do that.
Was that there's a lot of things I do not want to feel. And I, you know, let's be clear.
But yeah. I mean, that's a very uncommon response of like, oh, I didn't even need to avoid them so much. I just needed to take them in and realize that this was, you know, turning the chapter to another. Like, did you realize it at that time? Or is this more like retrospective of like that needed to happen and I just felt it?
I think it's more retrospective, you know. Okay. I felt it, and I didn't have, you know, any outlet, you know. There was nowhere I couldn't hide from it, you know. It's important to feel those things, you know. We've grown up in a culture that is, you know, all about suppressing those things, you know, and it's hard to unlearn and relearn, you know, but we have to do it, you know, if we want to change, you know, it's important to feel those things and not shame ourselves from any type of feeling, you know. Yeah, that's kind of what I've just been focusing on lately.
There's a lot of that I saw growing up, especially in a very religious setting, is kind of the formula, how I interpret it, whether I should have or not. But if you are righteous, you keep God's commandments, you will be blessed with prosperity, success, happiness. So then it's very easy to think the opposite.
That story.
Oh, I'm not happy today, so does that mean I'm not blessed? Is that, and if I'm not blessed, I'm not righteous?
You know? No, it sounds horrible.
Yeah, that's a lot of, and then you don't want to, and I still see it a ton in the, in the Utah very religious community.
Yeah.
You can't admit you're not doing good, because by admitting you're not doing good, that means you're not righteous. And you're like, oh, let's just feel it, you know? And for me, again, it took a few very uncomfortable psychedelic experiences.
Yeah.
Because if you just resist and you don't want to feel those emotions, it's hell. It's like, just go into them and process them and allow your body to feel and to cry and all of that stuff. But it was very different from, I guess, an upbringing too. And that's why I asked the question. I would have never said that. Like, I just need to feel it. I'm like, no, I want to avoid that crap at all costs.
Yeah.
Now my perspective's changing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, but it, you know, both ways I think are hard, you know, like to suppress them and have them, you know, transform into other negative patterns in your self is really hard, you know, and also to not suppress, I think, and to step into it and be present with it and feel it is also extremely hard as well, you know, but, you know, they both kind of have different results, I think, in the long run, you know.
Yeah. I think the latter produces better results, because if you are driven by fear and fear of avoidance of these negative emotions, once you just feel them, they're not as bad as, you know, you can survive. And then I think that kind of takes the fear away. So, like, personal experience, and for my wife, because she also has intense psychedelic experiences, and it's no longer like, oh, I don't want to have that intense experience. It's, I'm not scared of it anymore. I can feel it, and it's okay, because I know it's going to go away, and it's only temporary. And now we lean more into that. So of those two options, I do think they are both hard, but the second one of just leaning into it does result in a more, I guess, longer term tranquility. Shifting gears a little bit, the business. You know, you're creative, you're writing songs, but you're also a business owner. How has that process been, for the good and the bad?
It's been a very bumpy road, I would say. Because stepping into it so young, it was really difficult. You had to really learn quick, about the financials, and learn quick that, this is your thing, but it was weird because, being so young, I had these managers that were so old. I had all these old people telling me what was correct, and being like a young kid, they're older, they must know, how this works. So I'm, and trying to have a voice or maintain my voice, or, I was still finding my voice, so as a person, and I'm still finding it now, but at that time it's like so developmental, at that age. And it was very, very interesting. And I've had to, it took me, I think, a long time to step into the role of like, this is my business. This is it, dude. Like, you're the CEO, you gotta run ship here and you gotta buck up, even though you like fucking hate this shit, and hate these reports and thinking about this stuff, it's just like, but it's a part of it, and I try to look at it as an energy, and me taking care of like an energy, and trying to be a servant of like this energy. It's constantly, kind of evolving, but I'm still stepping into it now. I would say it's taken me a really long time for me to like feel like, yeah, this is my business. I think like, honestly, like becoming a parent, like really, really like made me feel like, this is your business and you have to look after it for, it's not only about you anymore, It's about your whole family, your kids' family, if you can support them in that way, not just monetarily, but how you raise them as people, I guess, and try to like distill the values you hope to distill in them, or it all ties in, So yeah, but it's hard, because I absolutely hate it. I hate thinking about, money and this going here and this going there and taxes and, just everything. It's, but when I look at it as an energy that is to be like kind of taken care of and in the proper way, it helps soften it a bit. But it's definitely kind of taught me how to like get into my fire sometimes, and you got to be kind of, clear and discerned.
I was going to ask, especially, so young, it's like, I don't know anything. I'm so young. I need to rely on these other people. Yeah. I've made mistakes and it lost me a lot of money, multiple six figures, probably multiple times for bad hires. It's like, this guy was the CEO of this company that did $100 million. He knows what he's doing. Right. I give him all the power. Nobody cares as much as your business,
yeah,
as you do. And I've made that mistake multiple times.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, he doesn't know what he's doing. I don't know what I'm doing, but at least I care more. Right. So I kind of need to step into my power and be like, okay, no, I do need to make the decisions while still, relying on others and their advice. Right. Right. Did you go through anything like that?
I think I'm still going through stuff like that. I think like you have to, like learning to, step into yourself and and realize that, you know, you do have to look after like as many details as you can, you know, ultimately. And you can't really blame anybody but yourself, you know, at the end of the day, I think. So it's, you have to be kind of clear, you know, at some points, which is kind of tough if you're like an empathetic person or, you know, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, you know, like something as simple as that, you know, that can cause more harm than, you know, rather than being upfront. And, I think, yeah, just, you know, getting into that kind of fire is important as a business owner. And so if you want to do it, you gotta learn it if you don't know it, you know. But it's a process, you know. Yep. It obviously helps to have good people around you, you know. And that doesn't come overnight, I think. I've gone through plenty of different types of people, and they've also gone through me as well, you know. And it's, I think it, we both teach each other things, even though it may have been hard at the time. And, but that's how we refine our vision and, you know, and get clear and what works for us and what doesn't work for us. You know? So
what does your business look like? It's like, what's kind of the structure of the business of a artist and a songwriter? Just curious.
Everybody is different, you know. That's there's no kind of, I think, like, you know, golden rule, I guess. You know, some people have had the same manager their whole career, and some have gone through, you know, a bunch in their career, or some may be on a big label and some may be independent artists, and that really determines a lot, you know, as to what your business looks like. You know, I'm an independent artist, so you're really running the whole kind of ship, you know, and you're you know, it's a business, it's your business, you know. You don't have anybody helping you, you know, you're hiring out, you know, what you need. You know.
And what are those types of things like that you hire out?
Well, it'd be like, you know, if I wanted to record a record, you know, I don't have a record company giving me a loan to go record that record. I got to come up with that money myself, you know. So if I have, you know, if I want to record with this producer on this album, that producer has a fee, right? And there's also costs in recording a record and time and hotels and food and, you know, all those things.
What does something like that look like, if you don't mind me sharing? Like, if you wanted to go record a record, like, what do you
again have? Everybody's different, you know. You can record a record for 10 g's or you can record a record for 150 g's or some, if you're recording with a big producer, I mean, I don't even know how much that would cost, you know. So it just depends on what you're doing, you know. But when you're independent, you have to come, you know, you have to come up with that, you know, obviously, unless you have like private investors or something. But I don't really, it's weird like talking like this, because like I don't really even think about this stuff, you know, with music, you know. It's like music, it's just crazy. It's just, I feel like I'm speaking in a foreign language, but this is how it works for me. You know, this is,
I'm music in the first and the business. You just have to do it to get your music. Yeah. I'm like, I love
no, the but like, I don't know what else I could say. I mean, I guess like for artists usually have like a manager, you know, and that manager is basically like your goat point person for everything. You know, and there's all different types of managers, you know, they're, you know, but a manager looks after the whole kind of ship with you. And, you know, a good manager will have like vision on growth and how to, you know, tap into your story and your gifts, unique gifts, and try to, I think, bring those and grow those and nurture those. that I think is a very important quality in a manager, you know. And then they also look after all the, you know, they're kind of talking to everybody, organizing everything for you, bringing you creative ideas. I mean, it's like you're like, it's like you're, I really see it as like, yeah, you're like brother or sister, you know. And then, you know, if you're a touring artist, you know, you'll probably have a booking agent, you know, and they're in charge of going after the tours that you want to get on, or setting up your routing and your tours and the venues, and they take care of all the contracts with each venue and all that stuff. So that's a really big piece of the business. And then you might have, some people might have like a CPA, you know, like a cash manager, you know, that kind of takes care of the financials and taxes. And because, you know, if you're a touring musician, you're paying taxes in multiple different states, and it gets really fucking crazy, you know, so you got to have some people, you know, look at that correctly. So that kind of forms, I think that would kind of forms like the core of the business, to answer your question. Okay. If you're a musician, for me, that's me. You know, if you're not a touring musician, you probably wouldn't have an agent, and you might have more of a publicity team or like something like that. But I don't know. It just depends on how you want to build it. You know,
that was super helpful. I was just super curious about it. And yeah. I also think, whether it's a musician or a doctor or an attorney, it's like, I'm good at practicing law, but I still need to make sure I'm paying my taxes. And I have to, if you own your own practice, right? And I'm also a marketer, and I'm a social media manager. You can hire people for those. But again, you're the CEO. And I think that is often overlooked on all of the other aspects. I mean, you mentioning taxes, we're going through that. We had to set up all these EINs through all the different states. I don't know, we're in like 20 something states, and you paint, and it's just like, I do not know how to do any of this. I'm just hoping somebody else is doing it.
I wouldn't know. I would be hopeless without my CPA. Like it's of great help, you know, and I'm lucky that I'm able to have that, you know.
And then that allows you to focus more on what you're more passionate about, what you love more.
Of course, you know, being an artist, you know, I want to focus on being in my flow and being in creation, you know? So yeah, you do your best to oversee everything, but also have to shut it out and be like, this is the roots of everything, and this is the most important thing of everything. Yeah. So I need to make sure I'm nurturing this, you know, more than anything.
Awesome. Are there any rituals or routines that you use to be proactive with your mental health that you can share with us?
Absolutely. There's a lot of different things. I'm just trying to think of, like, not so much in a rate of like importance. But I think finding one's passion is extremely important in one's mental health, you know, because just speaking from my own, I guess, like, sense, in my darkest days, you know, like, the only thing that has, you know, given me kind of a spark of, you know, like, joy or something is like music, you know, and song. And even if it's, that fire is like so, so low, even if it's just like an ember, you know, just trying to hold on to that passion, because passion brings life, you know, it brings fire, it brings breath, you know. And I think that that's like just important in one's mental health. So if you're passionate about painting, you know, I think it's important to like paint like every day or as much as you can, you know. If you're passionate about walking, you know, if you're passionate about knitting or physical things or reading, you know, stories, it's it's up to you, you know. I think that that's just important in one's own journey, I think, in mental health.
Yeah.
And I think, I think sleep is important, maintaining, you know, I find that when I'm kind of spinning out a little bit, I'm numbing myself, you know, I'm staying up late and I'm just like watching TV or I'm scrolling on my phone mindlessly, or I'm, you know, like, just, you know, being stupid, you know, and, just wasting this time to just rest my body and rest my mind. I think it's just like very important to try to find a bedtime routine, you know. And obviously physical exercise is like a huge factor in my mental health, or just it's more of just like movement of the body, you know. I'm not one that's like inclined to like, you know, go work out. I could, you know, sit here in the studio all day every day and work on music, you know. But I love the way I feel after. It's just kind of that process of starting, right? But I do find when I'm in a regular exercise pattern, my mental health is much better than if my energy's stagnant and just kind of stuck, you know. These are all just very practical things, I think, that go a long way, you know, for me, at least.
Yeah. I like all those. Sleep, I think, is time and time again, no matter who I'm following on the science, it's like, that's the number one thing you can do. And I've also, my favorite science podcast is Huberman Lab. And it's look at, actually, I'm right here. The cord's not going to go. Anyways, these super bright lights. You look at those in the morning, it resets your melatonin, raises cortisol levels to make you wake up, but it also gets that circadian rhythm. That's the number one thing you can do for sleep, and sleep's the number one thing you can do for mental health. And it's something so simple. You look at some bright lights and you get to bed on time, and man, it makes a big difference. At the beginning of the podcast, we talked about success, and it, you know, somebody else's definition of success is money or XYZ. That's totally fine. And I just had a thought to that, maybe challenging it a little bit. I think that success is money or house to the door. I think that's all pretty superficial, because it's really, what is that money going to buy me? And then what emotion am I going to feel after I buy a larger following or status or news articles or a new house. And I'm kind of looping that into what you said at the beginning of finding purpose. A lot of people, I think, we chase for that monetary success, whether we hit it or not. If you do hit it, then you're kind of like, oh crap, that didn't really bring me anything, because I didn't actually take the time to see what I'm passionate about. I just said, oh, money's an easy one. I like money. I like how it makes me feel. But we didn't really take the time to dive into it like you did. I'm like, I know very clear, this is what music brings me. And then you can go pursue that. I think a lot of us don't take enough time, myself included, to really find what we're passionate about. I kind of had to go through my own little midlife crisis to figure it out and do all the mission statements and core values and all of that. But I love that you found that so early on.
Yes, I don't know what I would do without music, you know.
And you can tell how you talk about it, how just passionate you are. So that's awesome. Last question for you then. What is the legacy you want to leave behind? How do you want to be remembered?
I don't know. I you know, all the usual things, I guess, you know. I hope to be remembered as a good guy. You know, I hope that, you know, my music inspired people in a good way, you know, or was a part of their life, you know, in a positive way. And yeah, you know, just those things.
I like it. I mean, yeah. For me and my wife, it really has been. So anybody who, any listeners who, for whatever reason, haven't listened to your music, go listen to it. I mean, that's, if you're not having a good day, you put on some Trevor Hall, you're carrying, and you're just like, why the hell am I carrying this?
Oh, good, so much sense.
Anyways, and your voice is absolutely amazing. So I appreciate you pursuing your talents. I know it's scary to go do something new. Obviously, you've been through a lot, but man, I'm sure it's rewarding for you, but I assure you it's rewarding for the people it's touching. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And what's the best way for listeners to connect with you, Trevor?
Well, trevorhallmusic.com is our website. It has all of our info on there, but we're Trevor Hall Music on socials. Check us out, see if it moves you. And that's where you can find it. Yeah, Spotify is Trevor Hall.
Okay. That's where it's at. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my G.